Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode, on Thursday, July 17th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Arizona, one of 24 states, suing Trump over $6.8 billion education funding freeze. Kelly. Republicans cut health care and food for AZ families so the wealthy could pay lower taxes. We are real people. Arizona Medicaid recipients braced for devastating cuts. Trump's deportation campaign undermines local murder prosecution in Tucson. Indigenous Lives Matter. Arizona's turquoise alert for missing indigenous people goes live. And let's get started. Starting off with this story, Arizona, one of 24 states, suing Trump over $6.8 billion education funding freeze, by Gloria Rebecca Gomez, July 14, 2025. Arizona and nearly two dozen other states are taking the Trump administration to court over its decision to freeze more than $6.8 billion in public education funds, which they warn will cause schools across the country to lay off teachers and shut down critical programs. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays lambasted the decision as unconstitutional and said it would spell disaster for the state. It is unlawful for President Trump to hold up this education funding and to wreak absolute havoc on our schools and on our students and families, she said. The Democrat has been fiercely critical of the Trump administration and mobilized her office to oppose its actions in court several times. This latest legal challenge is the 21st lawsuit the Grand Canyon State has joined against the federal government since January. On June 30th, just a day before schools were set to receive billions in K-12 funding, the U.S. Department of Education notified state education officials it would hold on to the money to conduct a review of the six federal grant programs it goes towards. Those grants help pay for before and after school programs, services for English language learner students, and migrant education, including for students who transfer from one school to another. The lion's share, about $2.2 billion, is used for professional development for teachers. The decision to freeze the money sparked alarm among the public education community just weeks away from the start of the new academic year and prompted school leaders to consider shutting down the affected programs or approving cuts elsewhere to make up the difference. May's office estimates Arizona schools will see a loss of more than $132 million, jeopardizing before and after school programs, teacher training initiatives, and summer school activities. As many as five school districts and a handful of charter schools stand to lose all the funding for their school safety offices, according to information school districts provided the AG's office. And rural and low-income schools are dreading the prospect of staffing cuts. Crane Elementary School District in Yuma told May's office it expects to have to lay off at least one preschool teacher. Colorado River Union High School District in Bullhead City would lose a science and a social studies teacher. Isaac School District in Phoenix could be forced to end its entire band program. This is essential education funding that Trump is trying to slash, Mays said. This is funding that keeps the lights on at our schools. It pays for supplies and teachers and school safety officers. The Trump administration is trying to take it all away for absolutely no reason. In their brief, the 24 states and Washington, D.C. urge a Rhode Island district court to compel the U.S. Department of Education to make the funding available. Congress already set aside the money for K-12 schools, according to the states, and clearly mandated that it be accessible starting July 1st. Neither the president nor any agency in his administration, reads the lawsuit, has the authority to violate those directives. It is Congress, not the executive branch, that possesses the power of the purse, reads the brief. The Constitution does not empower the executive branch to unilaterally refuse to spend funds appropriated by Congress and enacted into law. Yet that is exactly what the defendants are attempting to do here. Partisan divide leads to a difference of opinion. While Mays is adamant that withholding the funds will be detrimental for Arizona schools, the state's top education official says there's nothing to worry about. The Arizona Department of Education isn't involved in the lawsuit, and spokesman Doug Nick said there are no plans to join it either. In a video released last week, Superintendent Tom Horn, a Republican and staunch Trump supporter, dismissed the concern over the pause disbursement. "There is not a freeze," he said. "The federal government is just studying it." Horn added that the review is necessary to root out, quote, instances of far-left ideology being taught to students, and he said he would work with the Trump administration to ensure the money isn't spent on such goals. And, he said, the amount being withheld is negligible. "We're talking about less than 1% of the school's budget," he said. So if there is actually a freeze for a particular program they've put a high priority on, they can reallocate their own funds. So it's not going to be a terrible catastrophe either way. The State Education Department also estimates the cut will only be about $124 million. The projection from May's office was developed by a former state education official, not in conjunction with current leadership. And that concludes this story. Arizona, one of 24 states suing Trump over $6.8 billion education funding freeze. Our second story, Kelly. Republicans cut health care and food for AZ families so the wealthy could pay lower taxes. Senator promises electoral fight after Trump bill threatens 300,000 Medicaid enrollees statewide. By Caitlin Sievers, July 11, 2025. Congressional Democrats have wasted no time in going after Republicans who voted for the federal tax and spending bill that will cut health insurance and food benefits for the impoverished and disabled to pay for tax cuts for the wealthy. Arizona U.S. Senator Mark Kelly did just that during a Friday morning press conference at the IBEW Local 640 Electricians Union building in Phoenix, where he slammed Republican Senator Mitch McConnell for saying that people will get over losing their Medicaid coverage. Trump and Republicans in the House and the Senate, they were hell-bent on passing tax cuts for rich people and tax cuts for big corporations, and, to be honest with you, they did not care about anything else, Kelly told reporters, community members, and advocates for the programs facing cuts. Just 1 week earlier, President Donald Trump signed into law his, quote, One Big Beautiful Bill Act after it narrowly passed through both chambers of Congress with only Republican support, including from all of Arizona's Republican congressmen, Andy Biggs, Juan Ciscomani, Eli Crane, Paul Gosar, Abe Hamadeh, and David Schweikert. The bill will make permanent the 2017 tax cuts from Trump's first term and provide billions of dollars to carry out his plans of mass deportations. Those tax cuts, which primarily benefit the wealthy, will be paid for in part through deep cuts to Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Those programs, respectively, provide health insurance and food assistance to low-income and disabled people. Even with those spending cuts, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that the bill could add $3.4 trillion to deficits over the next 10 years. The bill is expected to shrink the federal funding for Arizona's Medicaid program by $35 billion over the next decade, which will force an estimated 300,000 people off the program, on top of cuts in services for those still covered. The Urban Institute estimates that nearly half of the 900,000 Arizonans who rely on SNAP benefits for food could be kicked out of the program, which would put intense pressure on the state's food banks. It is a colossal mistake that this government has made, that my Republican colleagues have made, and that this president has advocated for, Kelly said. The bill's passage has caused panic for some Arizonans who rely on Medicaid for their children's medications and for programs that help people with disabilities stay in their homes and gain important skills. Some 2 million people are enrolled in the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, or AHCCCS, the state's Medicaid program. But Democrats like Kelly have promised to try to reverse the cuts in the bill, an uphill battle with Republican majorities in both chambers of U.S. Congress. He said the best way to do that was to flip both chambers in 2026 and win the presidency in 2028. We've got to win elections, Kelly said. Elections do matter. There are consequences. We're seeing consequences of the last election, where the wealthiest Americans are going to benefit, and folks that have a hard time putting food on the table are going to be further at risk. Quiana Brown, a Phoenix mother of three, gets health insurance for two of her children through a Medicaid program for adopted children, while her oldest child is covered by private insurance. I have a perspective of what our healthcare system looks like as a whole, and it is an ecosystem, Brown said. None of it stands on its own. She added that cuts to Medicaid will impact the entire system, not just the people kicked off it. Brown said she knows that her daughter who has disabilities won't be kicked off Medicaid, but she might lose important services. The coverage means nothing if they don't have access to services, Brown said. I don't know how to explain to you the current feeling of hearing that your child needs a specialist and you can't find one that doesn't have a six-month waiting list. January Contreras, executive director for Children's Action Alliance, told the crowd that times are tough already with the high cost of groceries and housing, and that the bill will make things even more difficult for families. We will see hunger become a reality for more kids and families, and we will see more families not be able to go to a doctor, she said. Contreras said that her organization will work with Kelly and others to, quote, mitigate the harm and to document the harm caused by the cuts. That means attempting to reverse the cuts in Congress and holding the Arizona governor and state legislature accountable for doing everything they can to lessen the harm the cuts will cause to people, she said. Alexis Aguirre teaches English language learners in the Osborne Elementary School District and is a former member of the Roosevelt School District Board. Aguirre criticized the Trump administration's withholding of $6.8 billion that was set to go to public schools July 1, money that was already allocated by Congress for before and after school programs, migrant education, and English language learning, among other initiatives. I've seen firsthand what happens when we fund schools and when we don't, she said. This year, Osborne Middle School students doubled their English proficiency rate, she said, but that progress takes staff, training, and curricula, which all require money. When federal funding disappears, we're not trimming excess, Aguirre said. We're trimming to the core of our public education system. Terry Shoemaker, the executive vice president of the Arizona Food Bank Network, warned that more Arizonans than ever are visiting food banks across the state. She said 700,000 people visited a food bank in the last month. Arizona doesn't have the money to make up for the 30% cuts to the SNAP program that are coming. The cuts mean that people will go hungry, she said, including children and military veterans. The state's food banks will not be able to make up the difference either, Shoemaker said. The bill also gets rid of work requirement exemptions for people experiencing homelessness who might not have transportation to get to a job or proper attire. So what can we do? Shoemaker asked. Voice your concerns. Make sure all legislators understand the impacts of the bill. Make sure your friends, family, and neighbors know the impacts of this bill. Kelly promised to keep doing whatever he can, including advocating for restored SNAP benefits as part of a farm bill to reverse some of the cuts, but admitted that it won't be easy. We didn't win this fight, but I'm not over it, and you shouldn't be, because this is a defining moment, a turning point for our state and our country, Kelly said. He slammed Trump and his Republican supporters for taking lunch away from children to give money to billionaires. This is not a political issue. This is a human issue, Brown said. My kid's very life has been reduced to a line item, and it is pissing me off. And that concludes this story. Kelly, Republicans cut health care and food for AZ families so the wealthy could pay lower taxes. Next up, Arizona veterans urge Republicans to save the electric vehicle tax credits they just scrapped, by Jared McDonald Evoy, July 15, 2025. Veteran groups and a Democratic state lawmaker, flanked by electric vehicles, urged federal lawmakers Tuesday morning to save a tax credit aimed at making the vehicles more affordable that is set to expire at the end of September. The, quote, one big beautiful bill that Republicans crafted and President Donald Trump signed eliminates the electric vehicle tax credit along with a number of incentives for clean energy, marking a major reversal on clean energy initiatives that has major economic ramifications for the state. Among those rollbacks is the federal tax credit that gives electric vehicle buyers a $7,500 tax credit for a new vehicle and up to $4,000 for a used one. Representative Aaron Marquez, a Democrat from Phoenix, said he would not have been able to afford his Hyundai Ioniq 5 without the tax credit. This isn't just about me and my car. This is about our economy, our national security, and our future. Marquez, an Army veteran, said, adding that he is calling on federal and state leaders to support the tax credit and find a way to ensure it does not expire. Arizona has deep ties to the burgeoning electric vehicle industry, and the changes are sure to have an economic impact in the Grand Canyon state. Lucid Motors, whose Lucid Air just set a distance record, manufactures its vehicles in the state. Electric vehicle manufacturer Nikola cut 855 jobs in Arizona in February, and the judge in bankruptcy proceedings raised questions about potential buyers due to the Trump administration's EV policies. Lucid eventually purchased the property at a bankruptcy auction. The vehicle directly to the right of Marquez and others while they spoke was a Lucid Air. EVs keep Americans in the driver's seat, literally and geopolitically. Joanna Mendoza, a Marine Corps veteran and executive director of Arizona Vets Forward, told the press. Mendoza said that EVs help the United States move towards energy independence and away from global oil markets dictated by dictators. Sue Ritz, an Arizona Army National Guard veteran who worked in the mining industry for 45 years, said that moving to EVs also helps with the health and safety of the U.S. at large. They know their products cause pollution, Rich said of oil companies. It is not safe, and reducing our dependency on it is not anything but a good thing. A common argument among those who do not support the expansion of EVs is that lithium mining also has a major impact on the environment and can often be dangerous or done unethically. Ritz shot back at those arguments, saying that the infrastructure for EVs is by and large much safer than gas pipelines and other oil and gas infrastructure that has been prone to leak or in some instances explode. All the speakers also said that EVs are a matter of national security, that increasing our usage of them and creating more EVs domestically is important as other countries, including China, are battling over the EV market. As for a local solution, Marquez said that Tuesday's press conference was focused on compelling federal leaders to take action, but said he would be willing to work with any of his Republican colleagues who want to help support EVs in the state. There are a lot of electric vehicles, Marquez noted, of the vehicles at the legislature's parking lot. There does seem to be bipartisan support in the marketplace. And with that, we conclude this story. Arizona veterans urge Republicans to save the electric vehicle tax credits they just scrapped. And next up, we're real people. Arizona Medicaid recipients brace for devastating cuts. Trump's budget threatens to close 5 rural AZ hospitals while eliminating coverage for 300,000 residents. By Caitlin Sievers, July 11, 2025. A mother who works 2 jobs and her 3 children, the oldest with severe asthma. A woman with Down syndrome, whose mother has worked for decades to ensure her daughter has the best life possible. A family with 2 parents working full-time and a son with disabilities who requires numerous therapies and round-the-clock care. These are just a handful of the Arizonans who are at risk of losing all or part of their Medicaid coverage because of the massive cuts in President Donald Trump's, quote, One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The cuts to Medicaid, which provides insurance for 80 million Americans with low incomes or disabilities, will help fund the extension of Trump's 2017 tax cut, which primarily benefit the wealthy. More than 2 million Arizonans are on Medicaid and receive health care coverage through the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid program that is better known as AHCCCS. Thanks to Trump's budget, which was backed by all of Arizona's GOP congressmen, Andy Biggs, Juan Ciscomani, Eli Crane, Paul Gosar, Abe Hamadeh, and David Schweikert, an estimated 300,000 people will lose their health insurance. Alicia Jefferson, who works more than 40 hours a week between 2 bartending and server jobs in the Valley, told the Arizona Mirror that if she loses AHCCCS coverage, she'll have to travel to Mexico to get her son's inhalers. If she had to pay for them out of pocket in the U.S., they would cost $1,000 a month. I was in tears, Jefferson said, about her reaction to hearing that Congress had voted to pass the bill. We aren't just leeches, and we're not just cogs in a capitalist wheel. We're real people. The budget plan slashes an estimated $1 trillion from federal Medicaid funding across the country over the next 10 years, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Trump repeatedly promised during the 2024 campaign that he wouldn't cut Medicaid benefits, and the White House claimed in a statement that the spending and tax bill would, quote, eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. But there's no way the Grand Canyon State's Medicaid program can take the estimated $35 billion loss in federal funding over the next decade without cutting services or kicking people who need it off the rolls. At this point, it's hard to say how the cuts will be implemented at the state level and which people and services will be on the chopping block. But it's clear that AHCCCS cannot continue as is while taking such a huge hit to its funding, about 70% of which comes from the federal government. The total annual budget for AHCCCS is about $22 billion, and KFF, a nonprofit focused on health policy and analysis, estimates that the Republican budget will slash that by about 19%. With a total annual state budget of $17.6 billion, there's no way Arizona can make up the difference. KFF estimates that more than 300,000 Arizonans could lose their health insurance as a result. In a letter to the state's congressional delegation earlier this month asking them not to vote for the bill, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs wrote that the federal spending plan came with, quote, costs to the state of Arizona that our taxpayers cannot absorb. But Will Humble, executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, told the Arizona Mirror that now is not the time to panic. Just looking at it as a practical matter, a lot of these cuts aren't going to happen, he said. The provisions in the bill that are set to make some of the most significant cuts to Medicaid, work requirements, more frequent eligibility determinations, and limits on providers' taxes, won't be implemented right away. Work requirements and eligibility determinations every 6 months instead of every year are set to go into effect at the end of 2026, and provider tax caps are set to be implemented incrementally starting in 2028. Arizona levies a 6% provider tax on hospitals to help pay for the state's share of Medicaid. The bill will reduce that amount by 0.5% annually until it reaches the new 3.5% cap in 2032. Humble told the Mirror that the delays in implementation of these provisions will give advocates years to convince members of Congress to reverse the cuts. Humble, a former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services, said he believes the work requirements are the most likely to be implemented. But he said that rural hospitals, which would be hit the hardest by provider tax cuts, will aggressively lobby their congressmen to reverse the cuts or their state legislators to backfill the difference. Rural Arizonans are far more likely to rely on Medicaid for health care, about 38%, compared to 17% in urban areas. That means that rural hospitals, which already operate with smaller profit margins, rely more heavily on Medicaid funding. The provider tax cap would cost Arizona around $75 million to backfill the difference in the first year, and Humble told the Mirror he can't imagine the state allowing such a devastating impact on rural communities for such a relatively small price. If Arizona's legislature refuses to make up the difference, rural hospitals in ruby-red areas of the state could close down, and residents are unlikely to be pleased about that. Rural legislators in deep red spots will eventually come to realize that older voters in their district still want a hospital, Humble said. Proponents of the cuts have sold the more frequent eligibility checks and work requirements as a way to keep scammers and able-bodied adults who simply don't want to work from taking advantage of the system. But advocates expect those additional hurdles will call many people who qualify for the program but are unable to provide the proper proof due to a lack of time, knowledge, or technical capabilities. About 64% of adults on Medicaid already work full or part-time, and the majority of the people who aren't working are retired, in school, or are full-time caregivers for a family. Nearly half of those enrolled in Medicaid nationwide our children. Arizona was already set to implement its own Medicaid work requirement this fall, stemming from legislation signed by Governor Doug Ducey in 2015. AHCCCS did not respond to questions about whether those requirements would be implemented in October or if they would wait for the new federal deadline. Other states that have already implemented work requirements, like Arkansas and Georgia, have spent millions of dollars on systems that are difficult to use and cost more than they've saved the state. People with disabilities and those experiencing homelessness are the most at risk of losing coverage because of inability to keep up with reporting requirements. In Arkansas, tens of thousands of people lost access to health care, resulting in adverse effects for many. Adding more requirements that people reapply or be redetermined is going to make it just amazingly more difficult, John Myers, executive director of the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council, told the Mirror, and many people are simply not going to be able to do it. Families at risk. Jefferson's family has relied on Medicaid off and on for years, depending on whether her job provided health insurance. Right now, she and her three children, 17-year-old Dominic, 7-year-old Chloe, and 6-month-old Damien, all rely on AHCCCS for health care coverage. "Everyone I've ever known who gets Medicaid, they've always worked," Jefferson said. "They're not just sitting there leeching off the system." Without Medicaid to cover Dominic's inhalers to treat his severe asthma, Jefferson said she'll either have to travel to Mexico for medicine, which she did in the past when her private insurance wouldn't cover it, or rack up medical debt. "I refuse to let my son die," she said. The situation is also causing stress for Dominic, who feels guilty for the cost of treating his asthma, Jefferson said. "He now feels like he's a burden," she said. When her children are asleep, Jefferson said she cries in the bathroom with worries about the future, but added that she knows she'll get through whatever happens. Deb Sinclair, 69, is a retired nurse who returned to Arizona from Maine about 4 years ago with her 44-year-old daughter, Kelly Forent, who has Down syndrome. They made the cross-country move because of the superior quality of the AHCCCS program. Forent has been enrolled in Medicaid for most of her life. It pays for her prescription medications that cost around $1,000 a month, part of her dental care, and for the day program she attends for 40 hours each week. If Ferrant was kicked off AHCCCS, she would be in a more fortunate situation than most like her, Sinclair said. Sinclair has set up a trust in her daughter's name that could pay for her medications and other care if necessary. But that trust is meant to allow Ferrant to stay in her home and be well cared for after her mother dies, something Sinclair has been working hard to achieve for decades. If too much of that money was used up now to pay for routine care, Ferrant's future would look much different. "I worked a lifetime to make sure she was going to be taken care of, quite frankly, and I've paid my dues," Sinclair said. "I want her to have the best life she possibly can." But Sinclair said she still believes that losing access to day programming provided via a Medicaid waiver would be even more detrimental. Waiver programs provide ongoing care beyond standard Medicaid requirements, and some advocates are worried they will be the first things cut to make up for the loss in federal funding. Sinclair saw exactly how that loss of structure and social interaction impacted her daughter when programs were shut down at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. "We saw terrible regression in her speech and in her ability to care for herself or do things for herself," Sinclair said. "Just the isolation was unbelievable. She wouldn't leave her room. She wouldn't get dressed. She wouldn't go anywhere." The program that Ferrant attends includes things like culinary classes, music classes, and karate classes, as well as life and social skills. She also makes friends there, and the time she's away from home provides Sinclair with a respite from caring for her daughter, a 24/7 job. Exhausted but still fighting. Brandy Kuhn and Kathleen Muldoon were part of a group of mothers who in April won a months-long fight to persuade the Arizona legislature to provide a $122 million in additional funding to ensure their children and others with disabilities didn't lose access to vital services provided through Medicaid. Even though they're still tired from months of trudging to the Capitol to convince lawmakers that funding the state's Division of Developmental Disabilities was the right thing to do, they're ready to do it again. Muldoon's 11-year-old son, Gideon, has 42 medical diagnoses, including visual impairment, cerebral palsy, and deafness. He relies on his parents as well as a team of 20 medical professionals provided through Medicaid to navigate everyday life. While Muldoon has heard the narratives that cuts won't impact her son because of his high level of need, she's not buying it. Gideon's at-home care that helps him build physical strength to better communicate and be successful at school are all provided through Arizona's Medicaid waiver program. Muldoon, who is a medical school professor, said that waiver programs have been the first to go when Medicaid was cut in the past, and those services aren't covered by private medical insurance. If they were cut, it would put Muldoon in a difficult spot, possibly forcing her to take on additional jobs and to have little time to spend with her family, including her two other children. These cuts, she said, send a troubling message to people with disabilities and their families. The overall message is that people with disabilities are dispensable, that the needs of my son and our family are optional, Muldoon said. Medicaid gives us access to things that everybody should have access to, such as education and social supports and community involvement. Even so, Muldoon said she's encouraged by the relationship she's formed during the fight for DDD funding this spring and is ready to continue educating lawmakers about the value that disabled people contribute to society. Kuhn told The Mirror that she will also continue to educate legislators about the importance of DDD services to those who need them, with the hope that they won't be cut to make up for decreased federal funding. Kuhn, co-founder of the Raising Voices Coalition, one of the organizations that led the battle for DDD funding, said she will take what she learned through that experience into this next fight. I'm honestly in awe of the win that we had, she said, adding that she believes the key to success was a broad coalition of advocates who worked with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. She's specifically planning to hold Biggs, who voted for the Big Beautiful Bill, to his word that he doesn't want to see the vulnerable populations or people with disabilities harmed by the cuts. I'm sure he understands what strong advocates and grassroots efforts we have in the disabled population in Arizona, she said. Biggs is running for governor in 2026. Myers, the executive director of the Arizona Developmental Disabilities Planning Council, predicts that tens of thousands of Arizonans with disabilities will be culled from AHCCCS or lose access to services if the cuts are implemented. If they lose their prescription coverage, if they lose their health coverage, if they lose the kind of therapies and supports that allow them to have mobility in their communities and have ongoing engagement with their communities, their health is clearly going to suffer, he said. And as a result, some will die. He predicted that some of them will end up living on the street. Fundamentally, the message that gets sent is that people with disabilities are expendable, that they're really not useful members of our society, that they really have no value to our communities, Myers said. And as a result, if they lose their services, if they lose their health care, if they ultimately die, we're no worse off. On a personal level, Myers says he knows most people cherish the people in their lives who have disabilities, but this legislation tells them that they are, quote, just takers. Impact beyond Medicaid enrollees. Cuts to AHCCCS will make health care in Arizona more expensive and less accessible for everyone. January Contreras, executive director for Children's Action Alliance, told The Mirror. That's because people who lose their Medicaid coverage still get sick and need treatment. People wouldn't have any option but to go to the hospital. And when people use hospitals as their primary care, it's very expensive for hospitals, Contreras said. And that has to be passed on to employers and all the folks who get health insurance through their employers. This could lead to providers closing their doors in rural parts of the state, where people already struggle to find specialists and might already have to drive more than an hour for care. According to a University of North Carolina study, the federal Medicaid cuts will put 5 rural Arizona hospitals at risk of closing in Page, Winslow, Nogales, Bisbee, and Globe. And that concludes this story. We're real people. Arizona Medicaid recipients brace for devastating cuts. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Next up, Adelita Grijalva wins AZ District 7 Democratic primary special election. GOP voters send Daniel Gutierrez to the general election in September. By John Washington of Arizona Luminaria, July 15, 2025. Despite a contentious last few weeks of primary campaigning and hundreds of thousands of dollars raised by her Democratic opponents, Adelita Grijalva won the primary to succeed her father in Southern Arizona's Congressional District 7 with 62% of votes. More than 300 supporters filling Tucson's El Casino Ballroom screamed as the results came in around 8 p.m. Introduced onto the stage by her mother, Adelita walked up the steps and made her way through a crowd of supporters. "Muchas gracias, juntos. We did this. The campaign knocked on 29,000 doors," she said. 1,400 volunteers were part of this movimiento. "This campaign was about giving voice to this community," Grijalva said, adding that the campaign was not about an individual or social media likes, but about knocking on doors and having real conversations with community members. "I stand on the shoulders of giants," she said, took a pause, and added, "Raul Grijalva está presente. I am so thankful my dad taught us all. This is how you do this work. This is how you get this done," Grijalva said to another eruption of cheers. As she finished her speech, the crowd began chanting, "Sí, se puede. Sí, se puede." Grijalva will face Republican Daniel Gutierrez in the general election in September. Gen Z activist and first-time candidate Deja Fox and her supporters gathered at Zerai's International Bar in Tucson. Fox garnered national attention, receiving media coverage of her and her campaign in the New York Times, Teen Vogue, and the 19th, among others. She used social media and her hundreds of thousands of followers to raise over $600,000, according to her latest financial statement. Fox had 20% of votes. This will be the second time Gutierrez faces a Grijalva as he tried to unseat Adelita's late father, Raul, in the 2024 CD7 congressional election. Gutierrez led with 58% of the Republican vote in the primary. Arizona Secretary of State unofficial results as of 8:45 p.m. Tuesday did not include votes for write-in candidates. Eduardo Quintana, Green Party, Gary Swing, Green Party, Richard Grayson, No Labels Party, Andy Fernandez, Libertarian Party. Gutierrez hosted a party at a restaurant on the south side of Tucson. In addition to supporters of Gutierrez, fellow Republican Jimmy Rodriguez, Democratic candidate Patrick Harris, and Green Party candidate Gary Swing all showed up. "I'm tired of fighting," Gutierrez said, about why he invited both Democrats and Green Party candidates to his campaign watch party at Delicia's Mexican Grill. The mood and the decor were both intensely patriotic, with God Bless America, Toby Keith, and other American standards playing through YouTube on various big screens throughout the room. Bunting, flag-themed cakes, and red, white, and silver star-shaped balloons floated from table centerpieces next to plates of chimichangas. "It was a rather unique opportunity," Swing told Arizona Luminaria. He said it was the first time a candidate from an opposing party had invited him to a watch party. Gutierrez said the impetus to invite other candidates came from having a couple of conversations with Jimmy Rodriguez. "I like him, and he's a pretty nice guy," Gutierrez said. He said much the same about Patrick Harris, who also attended the Republican-organized watch party. "We absolutely need to start working together," Gutierrez said. He said he hasn't sought out endorsements from state or national politicians because, quote, "I'm trying to run on my community." Harris said that the whole purpose of his primary issue, Cap the Cap, which would cap individual profits at $1 billion and require any additional income to be invested for the public good, is to send a message we don't need to fight, Harris said. Harris City is glad to join the Republican Watch Party because I want to remind the Dems that you're not empowered. He added that they need to start working across the aisle. Daniel Hernandez, who took a more centrist lane than the other top Democratic candidates, had 14% of the votes. Turnout. Secretary of State Adrian Fontes held a news conference earlier in the day in downtown Tucson. There are 438,930 Arizonans who are eligible to vote in this CD7 special primary across six different counties here in Arizona, he said. Fontes said that as of early on Election Day, the race for District 7 was outperforming the last special election in Arizona, which was in 2018 for District 8. Early voting totals for each of the counties were Cochise County, 36%, Pinal County, 21%, San Cruz County, 30%, Yuma County, 18%, Maricopa County, 21%, Pima County, 39%. The seat will not decide control of the U.S. House, but it is one of three vacancies in heavily Democratic districts that, when filled in special elections this fall, may chip away at Republicans' slender 2020 to 2012 majority in the chamber. Hernandez led the field in fundraising as of late June with $981,000 in total contributions, compared with $834,000 for Grijalva and $600,000 for Fox. But Hernandez's high spending rate left Adelita Grijalva with the most money in the bank heading into the campaign's final stretch. She had about $128,000 as of June 25th, compared with $100,000 for Fox and about $37,000 for Hernandez. Gutierrez had brought in nearly $180,000 for his campaign, most of it in loans secured by the candidate. His $98,000 in the bank far eclipsed the rest of the GOP field. The primary winners will face each other in a special election on September 23rd. The person elected will serve through 2026. Representatives are normally elected to two-year terms. And that concludes this story. Adelita Grijalva wins AZ District 7 Democratic primary special election. Moving on to our next story. Trump's deportation campaign undermines local murder prosecution in Tucson. Pima County may sue the Trump administration over custody of undocumented immigrant charged with killing. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, July 10, 2025. In the early morning hours of June 30th, Ricky E. Miller Sr. was shot while sitting inside his truck in Tucson. The 69-year-old later died from his injuries. Pima County prosecutors quickly got to work building a case against the suspect, Julio Cesar Aguirre, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico. But 2 weeks later, that case is at risk of never being heard. Just days after his arrest by local law enforcement, federal officials abruptly transported Aguirre out of the county and have since refused to return him for trial. County prosecutors are warning it could negatively impact the state's case against Aguirre and are concerned the Trump administration may deport him. The case is one in a growing number that highlights the impact of the federal government's mass deportation campaign on local justice systems. At the same time that the Trump administration brags about expelling the worst of the worst, despite crystal clear evidence to the contrary, prosecutors and judges across the country have been forced to shelve cases and drop charges against people accused of violent crimes after they or key witnesses were deported. In Tucson, the Pima County Attorney's Office filed a criminal complaint against Aguirre that detailed 14 charges, including first-degree murder and 6 counts of aggravated assault. The federal complaint, meanwhile, only accuses Aguirre of 3 felony charges, attempted carjacking, the use and discharge of a firearm during a violent crime, and alien possession of a firearm. On Thursday, hours after federal prosecutors informed her office that they wouldn't be facilitating Aguirre's appearance at any hearings except for one initial appearance at state court, Pima County Attorney Laura Conover said she's willing to sue the federal government to ensure the county's prosecution can actually happen. Custody fight puts case in jeopardy. At an apartment complex in Midtown Tucson, Aguirre was seen by witnesses threatening to shoot Miller if he didn't turn over his keys. Aguirre, 42, shot Miller and then fled to a nearby home, where he once again attempted to intimidate the residents into giving him their car, according to the Tucson Police Department. Eventually, Aguirre was found hiding in a nearby storage shed and was taken to the hospital to treat injuries he obtained while fleeing. While Aguirre recuperated, Pima County prosecutors began constructing their case. During the course of the investigation, the federal government revealed that Aguirre was in the country without documentation, had been arrested more than 10 times between 2007 and 2013 for, quote, immigration-related crimes, and had been deported in 2013. According to a timeline posted to social media by the Pima County Attorney's Office, federal prosecutors agreed at a June 2nd meeting that Aguirre would remain in the county's custody to face a first-degree murder charge. Federal officials would be given access to Aguirre to pursue federal charges. But that understanding was upended later that day when federal officials instead took custody of Aguirre and transported him overnight from the hospital to a federal detention center in Florence in neighboring Pinal County. When Conover's office reached out to request Aguirre be returned, federal officials appeared cooperative at first, but quickly began to delay sending him back. On Wednesday, the Pima County Attorney's Office once again requested Aguirre's return, saying a preliminary hearing to preserve the testimony of three victims in their 70s who were held at gunpoint was needed. On Thursday, the U.S. Attorney's Office denied that request. In an emailed statement, Esther J. Winnie, the Executive Assistant U.S. Attorney for Arizona, dismissed Conover's description of events as false, but refused to offer another explanation. "Our office has a significant federal interest in this matter," she wrote. "The press release from the Pima County Attorney mischaracterizes the situation. However, we have no intent to engage in an exchange with the county attorney via the media." In a virtual news conference on Thursday afternoon, Conover called the process completely abnormal and accused federal officials of exploiting the case for political gain. The Democrat, who has been fiercely critical of Trump, lambasted the decision to deny the county access to Aguirre as contrary to justice, flying in the face of what voters want and undermining the Trump administration's purported commitment to eradicating crime. "This new federal administration said they were going to go after aliens with a criminal background, that people who had caused harm in our community should be removed immediately and have no authority to be here," she said. "That was something that voters got behind and agreed to. Never did they tell us they were going to deprive local residents of justice." But she said she wouldn't be deterred and that her office is exploring what legal avenues are available to ensure Aguirre faces the 14 charges in Pima County. One of those options, she said, may be taking the fight to federal court. "We want indeed to have a fair trial someday," she said. It seems like "someday" is sort of the operative word right now. Conover noted that the charges initiated by federal prosecutors aren't sufficient to ensure justice for everyone involved. The federal complaint doesn't include a homicide charge, and Aguirre pointed a gun at several people that day who are covered in the criminal complaint under aggravated assault charges. "We were trying to warn the feds that it needed to go in the direction of the state first and the federal government later, because once we had their criminal complaint in hand, the criminal complaint is about a carjacking with the use of a firearm, and then it's about possession of that firearm," she said. And that concludes this story, "Trump's Deportation Campaign Undermines Local Murder Prosecution in Tucson." And finally, Indigenous Lives Matter. Arizona's Turquoise Alert for Missing Indigenous People goes live, by Shondine Silversmith, July 10, 2025. An alert system established to issue statewide alerts for missing Indigenous or endangered persons is now officially online, offering a vital tool to assist law enforcement agencies in addressing an ongoing crisis within the state. The Turquoise Alert is a critical communication tool that will save lives, Governor Katie Hobbs said in a press release. With this alert, we are making sure our law enforcement officers and the public can respond quickly when it matters most. The Turquoise Alert System bill was signed into law by Hobbs in May, creating a new statewide alert system using the federally authorized emergency alert system. The alert is for anyone under 65 who doesn't qualify for an Amber or Silver alert. An Amber alert is issued when a minor is abducted, while a Silver alert is for individuals over 65 or with a cognitive or developmental disability who go missing. Before the Turquoise Alert, if a person 18 or older went missing in Arizona, a public alert of their disappearance was neither available nor required, a challenge many Indigenous families are familiar with. This tool is a meaningful step to improve the safety and well-being of communities across Arizona, and in particular, tribal communities, which for too long have suffered from a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people, Hobbs said. The Arizona Department of Public Safety will manage the new alert system, and it will operate in parallel with the Missing and Endangered Person Alert Code, a national alert code adopted by the Federal Communications Commission in the fall of 2024. The Turquoise Alert represents a vital step forward in protecting vulnerable individuals in our communities, DPS Director Colonel Jeffrey Glover said in a written statement. By empowering the public with timely, actionable information, we can make a critical difference in locating those who are missing and bring them home safely. To support the launch of the new alert system, a training curriculum was developed by multiple agencies to educate the officers about the alert. The training will consist of an 8-course module that introduces methods and techniques for responding to and investigating cases of missing persons and implementing the new alert, according to the governor's office. The alerts will be distributed regionally through various methods, including the Emergency Alert System, Wireless Emergency Alert, and Arizona Department of Transportation Vehicle Message Boards. Alerts will also be sent through the requesting agency's social media platforms and the DPS Alerts website. Law enforcement agencies across the state will also receive an all-points bulletin broadcast. A Turquoise Alert will be activated when a person goes missing under unexplained or suspicious circumstances and is believed to be endangered. And we're going to have to leave it there because that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Bye-bye.